Hello, and thank you for joining us for episode 9 of the Kind Stop the Bed podcast series. In this episode, we'll be discussing the cyber risks facing the aviation industry. I'm Melanie Hayes, Chief Marketing Officer at Kind, and today I'm joined by Kind CEO, Andy Thomas. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Melanie. Morning.
And our very special guest, John Head from Ed Broking. Hi, John.
Hi, Melanie.
Also joining us is Bill Parnell from Peak Risk Partners. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
They supply risk management and insurance solutions across the aviation sector, which is clearly a very handy in a podcast about cyber risk in the aviation industry. Thank you all so much for joining me. So to get us started, we all know there have been many highly publicised cyber breaches in the aviation sector, which probably isn't surprising considering the increasing digitisation of the sector. We can also see that the industry is starting to try and combat these threats. For instance, the International Air Transport Association, or the IATA, has begun development on an industry-wide cybersecurity strategy as recently as February this year. So I guess the pressing question is, how urgent is the threat of cyber attack in the aviation sector? Are the risks soaring? And can I get any more aviation puns in this podcast? We'll see. But let me start by asking you, John. Do you think the aviation industry needs to take this threat seriously?
No, absolutely. It is a very serious threat. It's a constant threat, but it's also a growing threat. It's really growing at an alarming rate. As we're seeing, both cyber attackers becoming more and more sophisticated with the ways in which they can gain entry into an organization's network, as well as organizations within the aviation industry becoming more and more digitized. So there is naturally huge concern with that process. And we're seeing it move in different directions. There are some organizations who are ahead of the pack when it comes to their digitization process. They might well be moving on to the most advanced systems, but they might also be starting to incorporate the use of, say, IoT devices, try and streamline their processes. And that's great because that can help offer a very rapid ROI realization, but it also comes with inherent cyber risks. You know, using devices such as drones to help conduct aircraft spot checks or examinations can really increase efficiency, but it also can come with major exposure via those devices. So we're seeing that organizations need to be hyper aware of the manufacturing process and the security within those devices all the way down to the chip level, as well as being comfortable with the providers of those devices and their own security levels. So that's one way in which digitization is moving cyber exposure and cyber risk into a more concerning area. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have the organizations who are slightly behind the pack. And those organizations might still be using outdated legacy systems. And actually, the costs involved of upgrading to more advanced systems to keep up with that digitization process is a very large cost. And some aviation companies might not consider that cost to be worth it, especially at the moment, whilst there's so much strain on organizations within this sector financially. But really, the consequences of this growing exposure and vulnerability cannot be overstated. Aviation is a globally interconnected sector, so that means that any disruption can really have massive implications on an international scale. So cyber attacks can cause financial and also reputational damage, as well as fundamental threats towards the actual safety of airline passengers themselves and flight crew, if a data breach or a network breach were to disrupt the actual flight systems themselves. And then there's also some exposure on the liability side. There are also some hefty GDPR fines if personal and financial details of a company's customer base aren't protected adequately. I think at last count, those could be up to potentially 18 million GBP, either that or 4% of an organization's annual global turnover, whichever is greater.
Thanks for that, John. It's interesting what you're saying about drones. I remember last summer, the drones were causing airports, particularly Gatwick, a lot of problems, and you don't sort of think of it from a cyber view. Andy, maybe you can tell us more about what makes the aviation an attractive prospect for cyber criminals. And are there any particularly vulnerable areas?
Well, thanks, Melanie. Yeah, obviously, cyber risk and cyber criminals can cause a great deal of damage. But the aviation industry has its own unique characteristics, really. I mean, first of all, the airlines themselves are carrying an awful lot of very sensitive customer information, such as their passport profiles, their financial details, and increasingly into the future, possibly even also their health information and medical information, or certain elements of it. as the world begins to unlock post the pandemic. Now, this makes them a very attractive target for anybody who wanted to go after personal information or large scale exfiltration of personal data. There's a number of ways that criminals can do that, obviously, including impersonation of the airlines themselves, registration of domains, phishing of their client. Then the actual aircraft themselves, and John touched on this in his previous comment about the increasing complexity of the plane, the actual infrastructure within the plane, the ground control and communications that exist, all of that is a potential attack point, a potential weakness within the infrastructure. And then also for aviation, their dependence upon third-party service providers. You know, I mean, a lot of industries use third parties, but essentially airlines are flying around the world and are connected to a variety of different third-party service providers, that all of which could carry potential weaknesses or potential exposure for the airlines themselves. There was a breach at CETA very recently, earlier this year, that affected a lot of related and actually slightly unrelated airlines, all affected by the same incident. So the airline industry itself is at crosshairs from a number of different angles from a risk perspective.
Thanks, Andy. That gives us a really good understanding of why the aviation industry is especially at risk from cyber attacks. And Bill, as someone working specifically in the aviation insurance, can you tell us about any real life examples of cyber attacks in the sector, either from your own experience or something that Peak have seen?
Thanks, Melanie. I mean, I think you don't have to just work in the industry, work in the sector to hear about some of the incidents, because aviation grabs the headlines when anything happens. And I think specifically around cyber, so classified, we've seen numerous breaches or incidents worldwide, many of which get into the headlines. I mean, we're talking typically about data, sensitive data, personal data, and breaches which are of the public interest. So quite often, risk is not only to that data and the security of that data, but also to the reputation of those airlines or operators who are involved and brought into these types of incidents. And I think that's another reason why aviation, as well as many other industries, are being targeted at the moment, is because of the headline-grabbing nature of the subject matter itself. British Airways saw a breach in 2018 that has gone on and rumbled in the press for some time, which led out of an unnoticed breach that had gone on for 2 months or so and was actually pointed out to them by a third party. Initially, the Information Commissioner's Office, the ICO, posed a significant fine on the airline of circa £183 million on them. By the time it was finally settled, they took into consideration the financial impact of the coronavirus pandemic, and that was brought down to £20 million. But ultimately, it was still a very large penalty, and something that I think to date, the original amount was one of the most expensive GDPR fines that we've seen. And that was an example where vulnerabilities to third-party service providers and their access into an organisation's systems is, as Andy talked about, can quite often be the a weaker link or a more susceptible way for cyber criminals to access an entity's information. So we've talked there about airlines. I did mention the manufacturers, but I think it's important to mention them, because when we talk aviation, we think about aviation. There's such a big part of it on the manufacturing side. And as well, I think the market does have a good understanding, and community does, to realise that they're not passenger-carrying entities. So data breaches are far less of a priority. They still have that as a priority because they carry a lot of sensitive data. But really, one of the major risks to them, the exposure to their IP or design material and the exposure to that. And so I think the reality is, in aviation as well, you can't generalise, and especially where sometimes you see the same standardised wording or approach with an aviation jacket going to both types of entities. It's not really applicable or relevant. And I think as well, it's important to say that there's a bit of a misconception that the customers don't know what they want, because we typically find when you talk to the right people at an organisation, they perfectly understand their position and are quite clear about what they want. And, you know, it's not just aviation that gets affected. In the last month, we saw a large ransomware attack on a gas pipeline in the southeast of the United States. And This had a big knock-on effect to the airports that pipeline provided and the refueling companies and the airlines. So the knock-on effect as well of an indirect cyber attack that can cause not just first-party loss, but rather there's a contingent exposure as well to an attack via a supply chain in an adjacent industry. So it's a really broad subject matter, but it is, again, as we've said, quite a fascinating one, and one that does need, the right approach and technique brought to it.
That's great. Thanks, Bill. Some really good examples there, and there's some very big figures attached to them. In light of these cyber breaches that Bill just talked about and the vulnerabilities we've discussed so far, let me go to you, Andy. Do you think the aviation sector is taking enough measures to overcome these glaring risks?
I think aviation is no different to any other industry in that the last couple of years, certainly the last 2 or 3 years, and particularly post the pandemic, has been a bit of a wake-up call to a lot of organizations where suddenly the risk profile, the cyber risk profile of their organization becomes under increasing amounts of scrutiny. And that's from within as well as with stakeholders without. So I think we've gone from a world where one or other reasons the board thought cybersecurity was a technology issue a few years ago. Now that's not the case anymore, and it's a far better situation in terms of executive and senior executive engagement into the risk profile of the business. But there's a lot of work to do, and we've done, as you know, we do regular analysis of different industry sectors. Our recent analysis of the airline industry showed that 78% of the organizations that we looked at had some vulnerability that made them significantly more susceptible to ransomware. And more than 80% of the businesses we looked at were still running software that was either out of date or no longer supported by its creator. So that's not a good place to be, but aviation is not alone in that standard being less than people would wish it to be. So there's a lot of factors within these risk profiles that there's a lot of work that needs to be done by every organization, but particularly looking at the human factor, the staff training, staff awareness. We know we go through it, Melanie, in PsyKind. We inflict ourselves through awareness training pretty much monthly. And given the size of many airline organizations and the remote staff working, the different profiles of staff that they have within the organization, the different risk exposures that those people have, then staff training is absolutely critical in this sort of area. And it needs to be continually emphasized and reinforced alongside a bunch of other cyber risk management practices that I'll probably come on to mention slightly later on in the podcast.
Absolutely, Andy. You're completely right. We do lots of training, cyber training ourselves. So Andy's spoken about the cyber stats and measures from cyber risk point of view. Perhaps I can go to both you, John, and Bill. What are you seeing from the brokers and insurance side of things? What steps are you giving aviation organisations to protect themselves or do things they need to help themselves?
Yeah, again, it's an extremely important question. I think what we've seen within the insurance market over the past 18 months, certainly on the cyber side, is a profound change within the rating environment. Ransomware incidents across the board, across industries, are causing a great deal of loss towards cyber insurance carriers. And so that in itself has led to a pricing correction taking place. And tying it back to the aviation space, I think obviously we've spoken a lot about the numerous and vast vulnerabilities which are faced by cyber risk managers within airlines and other organizations within the aviation space. And really, having conducted a bit of market research over the past 6 months or so, we're finding that some organizations within the space are not really being offered with adequate risk transfer solutions for that exposure which they carry. Quite often we find that particular agents within the cyber insurance space are offering off-the-shelf insurance products which quite often contain standardized coverage and might also contain a handful or one or two coverage enhancements, and because they do include some enhancements, they're given the guise of being tailored to suit the needs of an organization. But in actuality, we're finding that really the consultation with a particular client in the space has been somewhat neglected. And really, when you make that consultative process more expansive and you dig into more detail, you find that actually the picture is a more complicated one. Yes, there might be a need for insurance solutions towards some levels of exposure, But actually, some of the other coverages which are offered within a standard cyber policy might not be required in a meaningful way. So where we're managing to make a bit of progress with some clients is if we disassemble a standard cyber policy and then try to put it back together again, but being more mindful of the actual exposure which has been assessed and verified, then that's a far more effective way of creating an adequate risk transfer solution which is worth investigating for the client.
I think that's right, John, as well. And you know, collectively with John, Ed and myself and colleagues at Peak Risk Partners, as he mentioned, a lot of those engagements and consultations we're having where we're working with a broad range of aviation companies. And you've got to remember as well, when we talk about aviation, we're not just talking about airline entities. We're also talking about the manufacturers and the service providers. Quite often during the past 3-5 years and beyond that even, with experiences we've had at other organisations also, it is quite often that you've got an area that requires innovation. And sometimes you find degrees of inflexibility in the solutions that are being brought to market. And as John said, what we really mean by that is taking non-aviation coverages and essentially wrapping aviation jackets around them to make them appear to be tailored for the aviation industry. But essentially, it's not actually being a coverage that's tailored to the aviation industry's needs. So they're tailored. But they're tailored non-aviation solutions being adapted for aviation applications. So for us, it's what we've been doing is a lot of listening as well before we act. We think that's important in this ever-changing environment, is to respond and to find partners for clients in the market, so insurers in the market who are able to deeply understand the maturity and the sophistication of an individual client to be able to offer them something that they can actually rely upon in difficult times.
That's really interesting. Thank you, John and Bill. And Bill, I think you're absolutely right. Aviation is made up of many different components. I think when people think of it, you think automatically of airline, but there's so many different parts to it. And you mentioned about wearing a jacket. Did you mean that aviation should actually be wearing a life jacket themselves?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I had to get that in there. And Andy, given all the exposure to cyber risk that we've just discussed, and I know you touched on it briefly in your previous answer, but just before we wrap up, do you think there are any other steps that the aviation organisation should be taking to mitigate cyber risk and protect themselves from harm?
Well, I think Bill and John's comments were very interesting. I actually wonder to myself whether it's people who, whether it's insurers or markets who traditionally support aviation know how to better adapt a cyber product to the aviation market versus people who don't traditionally specialize in aviation cover. But I think any organization being presented for any degree of cyber cover these days will be more closely examined than they ever have been when they're buying such cover. I mean, John was referring to this earlier on as well, and we all know it's a hardening market and with an increased level of scrutiny. But actually, outside of that, the onus is on the aviation organisations themselves to put in place better cyber risk management practices and the monitoring for compliance against these within their organisation. So we touched earlier on some of the simpler things that can be done, such as multi-factor authentication. It's a word that's used widely. It's a term that's used all the time. But actually enforcing the use of MFA within email systems, email accounts, remote access to the infrastructure, selecting vendors you want to get a VPN solution for your company. Well, make sure your VPN solution has got an MFA capability within it and make sure it's used and enforced. Likewise, if you use Office 365, make sure you've got MFA turned on for every single account that's using that. In extremis, every single account that's based on Office 365, and at least with every account that's got any privileges associated with it. These sorts of standards, this sort of enforcement can reduce the risk profile of any organization, aviation, shipping, anybody. You've all got the same issue. It's not a uniquely aviation thing. But the enforcement of those risk management standards and the monitoring for the compliance with those is going to be absolutely critical, not only to the risk profile of the business itself, but also that risk, that business being able to transfer the risk that it wants to the market. Certainly for the next few years, the levels of scrutiny that are being placed on organisations will be are increasingly higher.
And some great tips there, Andy. Thank you so much. Well, believe it or not, it's time to wrap up. So I just want to thank you all for joining me. It's been fascinating speaking with you about the evolving landscape of cyber risk in an industry as large and complex as aviation, and just hearing all your insights about it. If anyone else would like some more information on managing their business's cyber risk, please contact us at hello@kind.io and we'd be more than happy to help. Once again, thanks, John, Bill, Andy, and to our listeners. And I look forward to welcoming you to the next Kind podcast, which is coming soon. Bye, guys.
Thanks
very much.
Right.